This radio program comes to you thanks to millions of young men in uniform, Americans fighting overseas. The Treasury Salute. This is a program of the United States Treasury, your Treasury, reminding you for the fifth time in this war, you save and serve when you buy war bonds. And you salute with us the hero of this war, Pharmacist Mate Second Class, Maurice Raderman. The Treasury Salute, featuring Martin Gable with David Brookman and the Treasury Orchestra.
Pharmacist Mate Second Class Maurice Raderman was brought home in a hospital ship. Tears filled his eyes when he felt his stretcher set down on the solid substance of the United States again. He choked up and couldn't even answer the questions the nurse put to him. He'd waited too long and been through an awful lot for this moment. How old are you, she said. But nothing came through his lips. About 34, she said, and wrote it down. What was Raderman's story? Supposing you were Maurice Raderman, where would you begin? You'd probably begin on that afternoon after you'd been transferred to the flagship when Chief Bosun's mate Casey called a group of you forward.
Fellas, there are a lot of Marines over on Tulagi Island. They've been there fighting hard for quite a while, and their supplies have given out. They aren't eating. We got to get some grub to them. Now, we got an old Chinese riverboat the Army used to use in the China coast. We can camouflage her and try to reach the boys. I want 29 volunteers. But I'll tell you right off that any man who goes hasn't got a chance of a snowball in Haiti.
You make up your mind. You're not going. You're still all in. You've got a rest coming.
I'll need 3 engineers. Call out your names when you volunteer.
There's plenty of action left for you anyway.
Smith.
Levinsky.
Harmon.
2 radio operators.
In a moment, he'll call for a pharmacist mate and you decide to let someone else volunteer.
Watson.
Kroger.
1 pharmacist mate.
Raderman.
There. You did it, and you said you weren't going to. What's the matter with you? Well, no pulling back now, and besides that, those Marines are hungry. So before you know it, you're on board that riverboat. You see Admiral Turner inspecting her, and when he's done, he faces all of you.
Men, this is a tough. I won't order anyone to go to sea in her. If you want to change your minds now, it'll be all right.
Nobody's changing. So the next day you moved out, loaded with provisions, rolling like a 6 submarine. How it stayed afloat, no one knew. On the third day, you went to the galley to help cook up something of a meal.
What do we got to eat, cook? I'm as hungry as those Marines on Tulagi.
Well, you'd better start chewing on some of your pills. This here galley is strictly a jinx. Ask Provost here what he thinks of it.
I just plain give up trying. Thought the best we can do is fry some hamburgers.
Yeah. What's wrong with that?
There's nothing wrong with it. Only the ship's rolling so much, the frying pan won't even stay on the stove. And besides which, I'm not feeling so good.
Seasick?
Seasick, homesick, and everything else.
Jesus, is this ship rocking. I never saw a ship rock like this one.
Hey, if this ain't just a roll, this is a tip over.
She'll roll back again.
Maybe she will, but that ain't what she's doing.
He's right. We're tipping over.
Hold your breath, boys.
Let's get out of here. She's on her side.
The old boat just tipped over on her side and started to sink. It was a wild few moments for that crew, you included. But somehow or other, they all managed to get clear of the ship and into 1 lifeboat and 2 rafts. 21 altogether. Lieutenant Commander McPherson put 7 men in each, lashed them all together. Some of the men were injured, and you bandaged them up while the commander explained things.
We're pretty far out at sea, boys. But with luck, I think we can make it to New Caledonia in about 15 or 20 days. Cook, what are our rations?
One keg of water, sir. One can of sliced peaches.
Well, that means an ounce of water per man every second day and one slice of a peach. Now, let's keep our spirits up, boys. Someone start a song.
Any song, sir?
Sure, Provost. Only one we all know.
We all know Three Blind Mice?
Try it.
Three blind mice, three blind mice, see how they run.
That's how it was on the first day. And with men sick and injured, you were kept busy. But on the second and the third and the fourth day, the water blazed with a hot sun. Some got badly sunburned. Everyone was thirsty. On the sixth day, the men really began to suffer. Throats and mouths began to swell, and the salt water made the skin sore. At night it was freezing cold, and by day it was blistering hot. It was on the seventh day that a Navy plane flew directly by overhead. But it passed by without seeing the 21 men in the sea. On the tenth day, you began to give way. It became hard for you to breathe. Your heart was gripped in a terrible pain, and you gasped for air. In your delirium, you called for your father. And after a while, someone came over to you, an old naval officer whose name was Murdoch, and took you onto his lap as if you were a baby.
Be quiet, son. I am your father. Nothing will happen to you. Just be quiet now.
And when you couldn't get your breath, he put his mouth onto yours and blew breath into you. All that night he kept you alive, and all the next day. That's the way it is with men adrift at sea. You fight for your own lives and for those about you. Hours that are as long as centuries pass, and every little incident is a crisis. 10 days. 11 days. 12 days.
Commander, I see land. It's land.
I wasn't quite sure if it was land. I didn't want to say anything till I was sure. Every man who has any strength left in him at all, start paddling.
You were asleep when land was sighted. And it was another 2 days before the boat and the rafts hit shore. 2 days of violence in the waves. 2 days in which men became furious and wild in their actions. Men who had suffered too long, much too long. But it was at dawn on the 14th day that the raft got through the reefs and ground onto the sand at shore. Slowly, ever so slowly, the men crawled out and lay on the sand.
Huh? We got something to eat.
Where are we?
Wake up and look around you, boy. We're saved.
What's that?
That's a jeep. We come through. Neil found himself a horse and rode to the outpost, and now they come to get us.
Murdoch. Is he all right?
Sure. He's all right.
Are we going home?
We're on our way, boy.
It was a long way yet. You were taken first to the army post. You and Neil and Baker the cook and Provost the Negro mess boy who'd sung all the songs, and Murdoch, the old naval man, and Tom Thomas, Connolly, whose legs had been hurt so, all the others. But the day finally comes when they put you onto a Dutch steamer with the men who've been wounded at Guadalcanal. And the ship heads east, toward home. One day you have a chance to weigh yourself.
Hey, this isn't right. Oh, these scales are all off. I don't weigh 85 pounds. I couldn't have lost all that. That means I've lost 70 pounds.
But they tell you you'll get it all back again, and so you go back to your bunk and dream a lot of things over and over again. pretty soon you stop thinking of the horrible moments of those 14 days. You think of the things men did that were good and fine. Like the way one of the men bathed the face of another with cold water when every move he made was a nightmare of pain. Like the way McPherson talked to you fellas, never letting on that he too was hungry and hurt.
It's this way, boys. If we can hold on a little while longer, we'll make the island. A good crew like this can't go to waste now, can it?
You remember the way Murdoch took you on his lap. And his voice still comes back to you, even though at the time you were pretty sick.
Be quiet, son. I am your father. Nothing will happen to you. Just be quiet.
And somehow it gets through to you in a way that you'll never forget, that Americans are good people.
Three blind mice. Three blind mice.
They're fighters. But underneath it all, they're tender and good. And given half a chance, they'll live peaceful lives without wanting to harm anyone. Well, one day the boat you're on touches dock. You wait your turn to have your stretcher taken on to shore. It's almost more than you can bear. When you know you're ashore, a big lump comes into your throat. And you can't say what you want to say about how you feel. Sure, you're a hero and all that, but really, you're just a kid come home again. So when the nurse reads your tag and puts your name down and then asks you how old you are, you can't talk. So she figures out your age is 34. And you don't tell her you're not even 21 yet. You don't care.
To get back home again, just try to imagine what that means to those heroes of ours. And if you can imagine just one little tenth of it, you'll back up the fifth war loan drive with every dollar you've got. For the zero hour is here. The grimmest, bloodiest battles of all must still be fought and won to get our men back home. Billions and billions of dollars are needed for supplies and equipment of every kind. The maintenance alone of a single soldier's overseas requires about 65 pounds of supplies every day. So dig down and dig down deep. Tighten your belt and scrape your pocketbook. The fate of the whole world hangs in the balance, and we cannot fail our fighting men. This is your war, and those are your men fighting it. So back the attack. Buy double the war bonds you bought before. And do it now, friends, for war doesn't wait. The United States Treasury thanks Martin Gable and the distinguished artists who appeared on this specially transcribed program. The Treasury salute was written by Forrest Barnes and directed by Paul Lewis. The music was conducted by David Brookman. This is Tip Corning speaking.